This podcast may contain content that is sensitive for some listeners. If you or someone you know is in a suicidal crisis or emotional distress, contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, The Lifeline, at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Crisis workers are available 24 hours a day. Calls are free and confidential.
What do you get every time you get nervous about
it? I don't know why. There's something about this.
Here we go in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Action.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Alec Mappa Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. I got the whole thing out, Matthew.
Yes, that was so good.
I'm Alec Mappa. I'm an actor and comedian. I live in Hollywood and sometimes I get things right.
And I'm Matthew Dempsey. I'm a multicultural counselor, psychotherapist, and Alec gets very nervous every time we count down to start the show.
I do, and then I turn into mush mouth, and but at this point, we're not correcting it anymore. It's about authenticity, and if I mess up the intro, then that's it. You look terrific.
Oh, thank you so much. So do you.
Are you still languishing? Are you still in the pandemic dumps?
Languishing. I feel flavors of language.
Me too.
Do you want to say what you've learned about what language is?
It is somewhere on the scale of from thriving.
Yes.
To what's the bottom?
Anguish.
Anguish.
Yes.
Is in the middle. That they talked about in this New York Times op-ed that the sameness of the days of the pandemic and everything have put us in this place where we're just kind of like, we're not completely depressed. We're just kind of existing.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, they termed it languishing.
Yes, languishing. Did we talk about that before
yes,
in one
did.
Of our shows?
Oh,
okay, good. So we've covered that. Okay, great. Languishing. So yeah, I feel actually pretty content. I feel pretty content. Yeah,
right.
I'm not languishing right now.
All right. I've been working out with a personal trainer in the morning.
Oh, how's that been going?
At 7 o'clock. It's great. But what happens is I'm exhausted by one. Because
yes.
If you get up at 6, then you feel like you've had a real... Look at my bicep. Are you impressed?
Whoa, come on.
Yeah. How's that for a thirst trap? So we have a great guest on today who's a good friend, but it's Daniel Francese.
Yeah.
From Looking and Mean Girls.
Yep.
Wonderful actor. And I'm excited. He's an activist and he is a body activist.
Yes.
You know, and he is about diversity and he's a great stand-up comic. But there's so many things about him that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the things we're going to talk about today that I didn't know about Matthew was that he was in conversion therapy.
I didn't know that either.
Neither did I. And he was raised in a faith-based household.
Yeah.
Were you?
I was not. So, I mean, I was raised, you know, like quasi-religious, you know, I would go to like, I grew up Catholic and went to CCD and did all
you,
that.
You went to CCD? You went to catechism?
That's right. My first communion and confirmation and all
Adorable.
Of that. And pretty much after confirmation, it was just like done. Like we didn't have to do anything anymore. But it was really, I mean, my family was not active in the church at all. My mom did it just to give us like some kind of structure around like spirituality or faith or religion, but it really was nothing that was super enforced. So I didn't grow up with that kind of hammered into me. So I don't have the same kind of trauma response to religion like a lot of other queer people do.
Right.
But I absolutely understand
it.
Yeah. What about you? Were you raised religious at all?
I was raised Catholic. We grew up across the street from St. Brendan's Church. And my father was the type of person who went every fucking day
at
8 a.m. And sometimes made us go too. And then we had to go because the church was across the street. We had to go, all four of us, every single day.
Oh my God.
Not every day. Every Sunday.
I don't
sometimes
do anything every Sunday.
Yeah. No. Did you? So you guys were like Easter, Christmas church people.
Like that's it. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mom wasn't even Catholic. We just went because my dad was, and she was like, okay, well, I guess we can do
that. Oh, so your dad was Catholic.
He didn't even go to the church. So it was just like, we just kind of did it because it was like, you know,
neither one of your parents were particularly religious.
Not religious, not like uber spiritual. There really wasn't a whole lot of like faith-based conversations happening in my house. No.
No.
Was it very, very heavily faith based in yours?
Yeah, because the Philippines was like a Catholic, was a Spanish colony for 400 years.
Right.
And what the Spaniards did to them was, you know, beat them into Catholicism.
Yeah.
And so, and because life in the Philippines is really arduous, you know, there's a monsoons and earthquakes and there's poverty.
Right.
They are in turn very spiritual people.
Yeah.
Some, you know, in as a survival mechanism.
Yeah.
In some ways, the way the people in India have a very strong sense of spirituality, because life on this plane is so arduous, you have to find some kind of like higher belief in order to make life endurable.
Yes.
And so I get it. I get it on a gut level. I'm not very Catholic. I never thought God cared about who I had sex with. I never had that.
So what was your experience growing up, especially as a gay person? Did you feel like for you yourself, it was beaten into you?
Beaten into me, hammered into me.
Hello.
Yeah, like they always said, Catholics are taught what to think, not how to think.
Oh, that is,
yeah.
I'm not going to speak too broadly, but I found that to be very true for a lot of people.
Yeah. That, yes. You know, in Judaism, well, because I grew up in a very Jewish neighborhood, all of the kids, it was all philosophical. It was all questions all the time.
Right.
You were allowed to question. You were allowed to challenge. And in Catholicism, it's like, nope, this is the way it is. And Catholics don't even read the Bible. The priests are like, we've got this.
Yeah.
This is too complicated.
Yeah.
We're just going to dole out a little piece at a time and explain it to you. By the way, this is a mental health podcast, folks. If you're tuning in, it's not a religious podcast. We don't normally go here.
Well,
download and subscribe.
But I was actually, my next question to you is going to be, how do you feel like it impacted you? How much did it impact your mental health?
This is what I think I've discussed this before. Right before I turned 30, my whole life went down the drain. I lost all my money. My boyfriend broke up with me and my mother died. And there was a turning point where I was really kind of looking upwards to heaven, and I was thinking in a Catholic way, what did I do to deserve this?
Yeah.
To deserve this all at once? Where's my place on the karmic wheel? And then I realized people die. That had nothing to do with anything I could have ever done. Mm-hmm. I trusted somebody with my money who I shouldn't have. That was my own. I took responsibility, accountability, and nobody told me to date that horrible man at gunpoint. So those were all based on choices and things that were, one, choices I made, and the death of my mother was something I had no control over.
Right.
And to think that I had something to do with it was magical thinking.
Right.
So, and that was the turning point for me with Catholicism. All of a sudden I realized, one, I thought like a Catholic.
Right.
I thought like a Catholic that if something bad goes on in my life, I did something to deserve this.
Yes.
That Jesus is keeping score somehow. God is keeping score. And if I'm shitty, then he's going to shit on me. And if I'm good, he's going to reward me. And then I no longer believe that anymore.
Yeah.
I just no longer believe that. I believe in being a good person.
Yeah.
I believe that spiritually, you know, with this life is we go through life, we die. Let's just leave the place a better place than when you got here.
Yeah. Well, I think what you said earlier really rings true and struck a chord for me too, which is that, you know, that there's a lot of religions that teach you what you just should believe and just buy it wholesale. Don't need to question anything. Don't think critically. And that's problematic because there are so many religions that really will just kind of beat into you, you know, what's right and what's wrong. And it becomes this judgment as opposed to an assessment of life and a guide to help you navigate things. And, you know, the thing to remember is that, you know, if you really kind of think of like the essence of what true kind of faith or spirituality is, that's very separate from what ego and a human framing of all of that is too. And things like, you know, religion and Catholicism specifically is man-made, right? Like a lot of the doctrine and the dogma and everything that kind of gets beaten into us, like we have to remember that it's through the filter of other human beings.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be a lot of that shit that's not really going to work for us.
I mean, we're talking about a text that was, you know, thousands of years old that went through the Anglican church.
Yes.
That went through the filter of St. James.
Yes.
And then whoever had it after that. So it's kind of like, catechism for me, I had to go to CCD also. And they basically would have like a flyer, a pamphlet that you read through at the beginning. And then for the rest of it, we'd watch Davy and Goliath cartoons. Do you remember those acclamation things? Gee, Davy.
Yeah, I kind of didn't really pay attention too much in CCD.
And it was in another Catholic, a Catholic school across the street. So I would look through people's desks and stuff. And
Oh my God, me too. Yeah. You'd go in because like the I don't know, the other kids that went to Catholic school every day. So we would be sitting at their school, at their desk. Once a week during the night. So you'd go through all their personal belongings. Like, what do these kids think?
Yeah, that was my favorite part of Catholic education. Ransack and nosing through other people's medicine cabinets, basically.
But I think the best thing, about getting older is getting, you know, having the ability to think a little bit more critically and being able to use religion, any kind of perspective, spiritual perspective, religious perspective, really as kind of like a consultation. Like, you're checking in, you're hearing information, and then you get to consider what really kind of works or what doesn't, what really aligns with what works for you, as opposed to just kind of like, as opposed to just kind of automatically taking it in, because then we don't have the ability to manage the shit that gets internalized within us. And especially with a lot of religions that really kind of want to beat it into you and tell you what's right and wrong, especially ones that tell you that being gay or queer in any capacity is wrong and sinful and you're going to go to hell. It's like, that's bullshit. And that really can leave a traumatic impact on us that, you know, it's difficult for us to have to break through that shame.
Beat it into you.
Yeah.
You're obsessed with that phrase.
I got it from you. You said it.
No, you said it.
No,
first.
I did not. No,
you said it. No, you said
everybody pause at this moment, rewind to the start and listen again. Alex said the religion was beaten into him and
you
into
said
his family.
Hammered into you. Listen, we have
you said beaten and then you said hammered when I said I didn't grow up with that kind of hammered into me. Hammered into me.
I love you so much. We have a great guest today. We're going to talk to Daniel Franzese, actor, activist, and friend. We'll be right back.
This is Jess Betancourt, the host of DNA ID, the only true crime podcast that exclusively covers cases solved using forensic genealogy. DNA ID goes behind the headlines to answer your questions about this remarkable new crime-solving tool, how it works, how cases are selected, why the cases were unsolved for so long, and how the justice system is addressing it. I include input from law enforcement to give you the inside scoop that we all crave with a straightforward, no-nonsense delivery. You can find DNA ID on any podcast platform. Episodes come out weekly on Mondays.
We are really looking forward to our guest today. He's an actor, comedian, writer, and activist. You may know him from his starring role as Damien in the hit movie Mean Girls, and of course, the lovable Eddie on HBO's Looking.
So good on that. He is the creator of several live comedy shows and co-hosts the podcast Yes, Jesus, which is a faith and sexually affirming podcast that believes you don't have to pick between gay and God. Welcome to the show, our friend Daniel Franzese.
Yay!
You taught me how to say your name properly. You would say it's like Friends AC,
right,
like a Friends air conditioner.
I don't have my own air conditioner. I have to use my friend's AC.
Oh, friend's AC. Yeah, I love
it. RuPaul made that up, actually. Yeah.
Never mispronounce it again. Now, listen, I've known you for a hot minute. We've hosted events together. We performed together. I never knew you were in conversion therapy.
Yeah, you know, it's not something that you're like, bring up all the time. And it was
chicken or the fish? Well, the fish. I was in conversion therapy.
For about 9 months when I was 21, you know, I put myself in conversion therapy. Yeah.
Nine months.
Yeah.
And this was self-voluntary.
You know, the way I kind of saw it was like, if you're having like a problem with like ringing in your ear, you don't just go to your general practitioner. You try to find a specialist. I was like, I want to know somebody that is a specialist on the subject, because it's not brought up a lot and some people have negative thoughts and I don't really want to listen to them. I know gay people. I like gay people. I just want to be diagnosed as gay. Like, I want to be told that that's what's going on with me. And if it was something that I could get out of.
How old were you at the time when this was really happening?
I was 21.
Oh, okay.
21. Yeah. I had just started my career in musical theater.
And I wanted to be a heterosexual in musical theater.
Yes, basically. Musical theater inspiring heterosexuality.
Basically, yeah. I was working as a singing waiter at a restaurant when I wasn't doing plays, and I had a girl there, and she became my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I had had sex with a girl before in college, and her and I started dating, and I was used to always picking the girl that was like the virgin in college that wanted to wait so long. So it made me look like I was occupied or
right.
falling in love with the girl who already had a boyfriend that she's been with for 5 years. Mm. So I don't have any, you know, I'm just like, damn, I don't care. I only care about her. You know, it was always like having someone to pine after. But so I dated this girl, and on our second date, she told her friend, like, I can't believe we didn't even have sex yet. And I was like, oh my God. Like, this is gonna happen real fast, you know. And when it got down to it, I was just like, why can't I do this? And so I came up with this elaborate plan that I would tell my grandmother that I was having erectile dysfunction, and maybe she could get my grandfather to get Viagra and give it to me, and then I could have sex with my girlfriend. I was gonna even just medically stop myself from being
coming
gay.
Up with a solution.
Like things to fix.
Was it because the thought of being gay was just kind of like, I don't want to be that? And what were the thoughts behind that? Because I feel like my version of that was in high school. It was like there was a girl who wanted to be my girlfriend and wanted to have sex with me. And I was like, this is my chance. Like, I remember thinking the thoughts that this is my chance to be kind of a regular person. But it always felt like a costume. It always felt put on to me.
You know, I've always been a romantic, like. Even when I was a small child, I loved romance. I used to be like, when I get married, my mom said she knew I was gay when I was like 10. And I was like, when I get married, I'm going to get a skywriter to go across the sky above the beach. While everyone's in. My mom was like, what guy thinks of that?
I'm going to have canapes at the very beginning of the wedding. I'm going to pass out cannolis.
When I really think about it, I truly think that, like, in my heart of hearts, that I might have been bi-romantic and just homosexual always.
Wow.
Like, I think that, like, when I was younger, I could fall in love with a girl. And that's what was, like, confusing for me because, like, when I was in college, there was this girl, I fell in love with her. There's no doubt. Like, you know, I remember being at her wedding and just, like, feeling the pain of seeing, like, my wife get married to somebody else.
Yeah.
But just not having that sexual desire. Like, and I think that that's how a lot of queer people end up in married relationships and being confused. Mm. And then in the future end up coming out late in life. But for me, I also had the fact of unaffirming churches and living in the South, like growing up in South Florida. Like, I feel like people were accepting, but they weren't. It was always still a bit of a joke. Everyone was like, that shirt is gay. Like, that, you know, like, oh my God, you like this country music? That's gay.
Everything was gay.
Everything's gay.
And that was like a negative thing, you know? And even my mother, who has always been so supportive, was like, if you're gay, if you're a serial killer, if you're a thief, like, I don't care. Like, I love you no matter what. Like, she was trying to say she loved you no matter what, but was grouping it in
with serial killers,
other things. You know?
Can I be a gay serial killer? Because those are around.
And
I just felt like, you know, where do I belong in this? And then even as a person in musical theater, I felt different. Like, now we all realize this, all this gender construct stuff, right? I was like a faggot in my family for liking musicals, but I wasn't, you know, or like from my uncles or whatever. But then, like, amongst gay people, I was maybe like a little more butch or something, and like didn't get all of their jokes about like dancing and things that I didn't know then yet, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, where do I belong? Like, kind of thing. I couldn't understand. Like, the one out gay kid in my college had a pride flag canopy over his bed, which like was pretty fierce, but like especially for back then, intimidating. I was like, that's not me. So who am I? And then it became,
it sounds like it was beyond your comfort level about like who you were. Yeah.
But the sex wasn't. I was so excited to try things. And, you know, it was also the kind of time where it was like everyone would go to a rave and then do ecstasy. And if you made out with a guy, it was okay. Like, it wasn't like, there was like this like bi-curious coolness thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like
from
like Kurt Cobain and all these other people.
And like Pete Wentz, emo, like that whole kind of emo mode. Yeah.
Right. Like, I remember Details magazine was a big deal for me because it started being like a gay magazine in a way. It was so progressive, like, you know, Glenn O'Brien wrote for them and talked about style. And then there was like they would say like, is it, you know, gay or metrosexual? And
yeah,
it was,
right.
it was cool for guys to paint their fingernails navy on one hand. And I was like, mm-hmm. oh, and I yes. immediately did that.
Yeah.
Like, I immediately did that. Like, you know, I mean, and it was those kind of things that I'm just like, you know, realizing I had all these kind of gender constructs and things like in my head, you know, and I think going to conversion therapy was like the first step of me unraveling that, because I actually did find out what I wanted to find out by going. I know a lot of people have not had good experiences there. Mine wasn't good by any means, but like my co-host Azariah Southworth on Yas Jesus, his version of conversion therapy was every Sunday, his entire teen years, he got an exorcism from the pastor and the elders of the church. Like trying to
exercise, to drive the gay demon out of him. Okay.
You know, and other people have received, like my makeup artist has got electric shock when he was younger. Like, like some people have been through some really bad experiences.
Yeah,
mine was
yeah.
psychological. The one horrible thing that they did was the one person who really stood by me was my mom. I remember when I was little and I was buying skates. All the kids, there was like a skate craze, like in, you know, Brooklyn, and everyone, like when we lived in Brooklyn, and everybody was skating everywhere. And so I went and picked out white Care Bear skates. And then like I was riding in them the next day. This is like 1984, right? And I'm like skating around in them and stuff. And one of my mom's girlfriends was like, why did you get him white skates? Like, look, all the kids were like, girls have white skates. And I looked around and every girl had white skates and every guy had black skates. And
right.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, leave him the fuck alone. That's the skates he wants. You know,
good.
We were like,
yeah,
it's just skates. Like,
good,
and I was like, yeah, it's just skates. Like I didn't really kind of pin it to sexuality, you know, but those were the signs, you know, those are the things about me that just like
felt that you were drawn to as a child.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
I loved Bette Midler and Carol Burnett, but I didn't want to play catch with my dad. Like, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I carried around my Cabbage Patch doll like it was a live human being. Like, the only thing I could have done is fed it milk for my teeth.
Oh my God, I love that. I remember when I was in seventh grade, me and my family went on a cruise down to the Bahamas, and I got like, I think like a total of like 8 braids in my hair with like the little beads. And I remember going back to school and my tan was fierce and I had the braids with the colored beads and I thought I was literally killing it. And
you're
were just like, nice braids, bag. And I'm like, Jesus.
I know. Isn't it funny? It's like, as a kid, you kind of like, this is the angriest I ever got at my father. You know, we adopted our kid when he was 5 and he lost his mother. And so he was attracted to a lot of feminine things. We would say, pick out a nightlight. He picked out Tinkerbell. Pick out a sippy cup and he'd pick out Minnie Mouse. So he was attracted to the feminine because that's what he was missing. Yeah. Being raised by 2 guys. So his lovey toy was Jessie from Toy Story.
Because
both his dads are queer, we never were going to go, don't pick out a girl's doll. It was like, pick out the doll you want. So we went to visit my father in Las Vegas and we walk into my father walks into her hotel room, sees my kid with a Jessie doll. And he goes, why does he have a girl's doll? That's a girl's doll. And I yanked him by the arm, pulled him into the bathroom, got into his face like Teamster style. And I was like, he can have whatever kind of doll he wants. Period. End of subject. Do not bring this up again. And I had murder in my eyes.
Yeah.
Because it was like, I'm not having it. So this is my thing. But conversion therapy, the end game is you do this therapy and you're going to come out a heterosexual, right?
Yeah, but I didn't realize that. See, what I did was my grandmother, when I told her my plan, she had like a bookmark in the Bible and she was like, look, I just think, and I was like, oh my God, do you think I'm gay? Ah! And I like freaked out. Like, and I prayed in her bathroom, which to me was a very holy space because my Nana still to this day is our big prayer warrior, 90 years old, still with us, God bless.
Wow.
But like I was like in her bathroom and I was like, God, I am coming to you right now as like your son. And I am opening up the clouds in the heavens and I'm staring at you right in the face. And I'm telling you right now that if you don't want me to be gay, then bring me a woman that I could give everything that she needs and she could return it to me. I'm like, but if you don't do that, then I'm going to know that you want me to be this way. And I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to figure out why. I was like, because I'm done playing, like, you know.
Yes, challenge and authority.
Challenge authority. And then so immediately my grandma was like, do you want me to talk to the pastor about this? And I was like, you know what? Yeah. And she did. And the next week she was like, the pastor said he doesn't really know much about this, but someone coincidentally, and I don't believe in coincidences, especially spiritually, he was like, came in and just spoke to him about something like this and gave him this card. And he doesn't know the guy, but maybe it'll help you, kind of thing. So I don't blame anyone. like even the way that was framed to me, I don't blame the pastor, my nana, nothing. I got the card. I called it. The guy called me in. Now, the first thing I do is fill out this test. And it's like every fifth question is like a hidden gay agenda question. It's like,
finish this sentence. Clang, clang, clang went the.
No, like, honestly, it was like so that. It was like, question number one, have you ever stolen anything over $500? Question number two, like, have you ever committed suicide? Question number three, like, are you a meat eater? Question number four, it's like, you know, do you have allies in your life? It was like, question number five, are penises pretty? And then, like, as I started going through, like,
yeah, duh.
Like, every question number five was like super gay. And I was like, should I just be filling out all the fives? Like,
yeah.
So, whatever, I filled out the whole thing.
So that had, doesn't like, even sound slick. Our penis is pretty. I want to know what are the other gay questions?
Yeah. Right? Like, how do I look in this?
Yeah.
I think it was stuff
are
like,
my seams showing?
Do you find the naked? Do you find yourself finding the male naked form arousing or things like that? Like, really?
Right.
Like,
right.
Okay. Anyway, like,
Did you answer it honestly?
Yes, except for the parts where it asked if I had ever had experiences yet. Because I had a few things that happened in college that I was like, no. You know, like I didn't want to write down what I was doing for fear that there could be retaliation even.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like what if I'm outing myself and all of a sudden I'm be surrounded by eight people in suits or something? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, okay.
I really, this place was also kind of like, as you expect it to be, like he just rented like probably an office in some random office park. So it's like at 9 at night, nobody's there, coming into the building.
And was it religious? Was it a faith-based conversion therapy?
It was. And the guy was a girl. He was a sister. If ever,
oh, he was like, gay. Yeah, all the ex-gays are totally gay. Like anytime they like, come to our conversion therapy thing. You know, it's just kind of like, girl.
Sister, he was like, listen, sit down. Let's have our conversation. Like, just really like that, right? And so he's getting like, not the stereotype, but I was like, okay, cool. Like this guy's going to know if I'm gay or not.
Okay.
Like, read me, sis. You know, like,
okay.
And he just was like, first of all, he was like, I gave him a whole bunch of spiels and I told him about all this stuff, especially how open my mom always was with me. Mm-hmm. My mom's feelings on sex were like, if they're old enough to ask like what it is, then I should tell them, you know?
Mm.
And kids were talking about blowjobs and my mom was like, you're going to think this is disgusting. I think I was like 7 or 9 or whatever. I don't even know how old I was. She was like, but it's a sexual thing that when you're married and two people love each other, they do to each other. And it sounds so gross now. So I don't want to tell you yet. And I was like, okay. But then when it got to the point where like, no, tell me, you know, she was like, this is what it is. Just blatant, like, you know, and I was like, yeah, she's like, I told you, you know, but like later on, you'll understand. So now go back and play, like, you know, kind of thing. So he didn't like that. He said that my mom was too open with me about sexuality and like that maybe she promoted things because of things I had told her or whatever.
Wow.
And so he said to me these words that I was just dying to hear. He was like, you're not gay. And I was like, oh, my God, like, thank you. He goes, I have gay clients. He's like, and you're not gay. And I was like, oh, you have gay clients. I was like, you know, and he kept talking. And I'm like, so other gay people come in here. I wonder what they look like. Maybe I should wait in the parking lot. Like, you know, like your mind is just like constantly like other gay people, you know? And so he was like, you're not gay. He's like, you're having gay thoughts because your mother told you all this stuff. And you need to tell your mom that you're having bi-curious feelings and that it's her fault and she needs to stop. And so I was like, okay. And then I was
but this isn't based on any empirical... Well, psychological practice or you know, anything. I mean, it's not.
There's always scripture involved. There was always other things, misuse of scripture.
Yes.
Things like, you know, just things like that. That stuff didn't really get to me because through all of this, my faith never wavered. This isn't a problem that I'm having with God. This is a problem I'm having with someone not being able to give me the answer that I want.
So after, you're going to this like once a week for 9 months. When does the tide start to turn? What is there a moment where.
Instantly. I said to him, I broke down a little bit and I started to cry and I was like almost like hyperventilating a little bit. And I just was like, I'm just so nervous about it. And he was like, what is your problem? And he goes, I was just talking to my wife the other day and I go, your wife? And he goes, yeah, I'm married with 2 children. I used to be gay. And I was like, used to be gay. I was like, look, I don't know if I'm gay, but for shit sure, I know you're gay. Do you
know
what I mean?
Like, yeah. It takes one to know one, lady.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what's going on? And he was like, well, I used to be gay. This is like an ex-gay situation. Like, I'm trying to help you get rid of those feelings. And I was like, no, that's not what I came here for. And he was like, well, what are you afraid of? And I said, honestly, that I'm going to go to hell. He's like, you're not going to go to hell. And I was like, I'm not. And he goes, no. He goes, you could be sucking a dick and the second coming of Christ could happen at that moment and you'll still go to heaven because you believe in God. It's not about your actions. And I was like, oh, it's not?
I was like, that's like the only permission you needed to hear was you can suck a dick and go to heaven.
2 minutes later, he had a dick in his mouth. It was kind of like, I grabbed one right out of the window.
I literally went home, went on AOL, found a guy, and lost my virginity.
Oh, yes, AOL. That's fantastic.
In that moment. And, you know, it wasn't ideal. I purposely chose someone that I wasn't attracted to because I was like, at least if I, you know, what if I would like them? Like, I was like, I want to just feel it and see what it feels like and make the mistake with someone that I don't care about. Like,
Wait, stop.
Horrible logic. Horrible logic.
Purposefully pick somebody you weren't attracted to.
Yeah.
So was it a woman?
It was like at the time, like, I love my bears. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
At the time that I was like 21, I had like still had the fantasy that I wanted to be like, I loved like twinks and I thought, you know, so this was like an older bearish guy.
Okay.
But now like, it's totally like,
you'd be like,
I'd be like, yum, 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 with the bread at the end of the spaghetti meal. but back then I was just like scared of older people. And, you know, I wanted to just like try someone my age, but instead I went to like somebody who I guess was at the time, like, you know, probably like a late 30s bear.
Can safer. I say something 1 second? It's like California, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is outlawing conversion therapy. I think we might be the first state to kind of, because there have been abuses in the system.
It's legal in like 33 states now. Like, it's,
right.
Yeah.
But I did work with a queer youth who was from Texas, and he said that when he was going to conversion therapy, and it was the same thing. He's like, he was a total jock. He was a basketball kid. He was like a good kid. He was a kid that you always introduced. People always introduced their daughters to him. He was an all-American jock, and he didn't think that he was gay. So he went to conversion therapy. And when he went to conversion therapy, he told me every time conversion therapy was done, and it was a faith-based conversion therapy, he would go home and he would cut himself. He started cutting himself pretty regularly until he was like completely lacerated because it was just kind of like the release of it. And he finally went. And then he said on the days that he didn't go, he felt no interest in cutting at all.
Yeah.
And finally he brought it up to the pastor. Every time I go to this, I cut myself. And the pastor said to him, that is better than being gay.
Wow.
Your self-harm is more pleasing, is less deleterious to you in the eyes of God. And he said that was when it was like, I'm done. I can't believe in a God that would make me want to do this.
In the intro, Alec, that really stuck with me, where you were just like in the church, like they don't even let you touch the Bible. They're reading from it. That's not how it's supposed to be used. See, that's something that's, the Bible is a reflective text. Like, you're supposed to study it and go through it yourself. And it's only supposed to mean something to you. So to have a person that's like a conduit between you and the word is so bizarre.
Yeah, but that's how we were raised, right? That's the Catholic Church.
It is the Catholic Church. And I know there's a lot of wonderful, devout, amazing Catholic people, but I feel like the Catholic Church is this whole construct that like all of the, there's so many different things in there, like sacraments and things that aren't even in the Bible that the church decides and makes up at a whim. Like the Pope could be like, gay people are great. No one should be made sick or kicked out over it. And the next minute the Vatican will like arm press him and make him release some statement saying that like being gay is sin and they won't bless same-sex unions. It's like, it's more of a political system. They're the number one real estate holder. It's a lot of money and power. There's a lot of money and power that go into that I don't think belongs in my own personal version of Christianity.
Yeah, and it's so random. I mean, I remember going to my first confession when I was 7. And I was thinking, why am I confessing? Because they said 7 is the age of reason, meaning that is the age where you know right from wrong. And having said that,
there's an innocent seven-year-old on a farm right now, and then there's a 7-year-old in New York City that's like lighting a cigarette off his boot.
Right.
Like, there's different types of kids everywhere. And I think that like, that's the problem. Okay. What's missing from the church's perspective, and especially queer perspective, which is why on our show, Yash Jesus, we shine a rainbow light on some of these things, some of these obvious things. There's an incredible gay love story between David and Jonathan in the Bible that like literally puts Game of Thrones to shame. Like, I get caught when I read it. Read 1 Samuel as a gay man and you'll see a love between two men. It says their souls were knit when they met each other. David was like this hot twink fighter that just defeated Goliath. And Jonathan was like the next in line to be king of Israel. And like his father just didn't approve of it, kept trying to kill David. They kept sneaking away, kissing, removing their loincloths to each other. Like,
I don't remember that being read to me.
No, of course it wasn't. You're not allowed to hear story. That. Do you want to know something that's so fucked up too? That there's another amazing story between two women where, which may or may not be perceived as lesbian, but it's definitely full wholehearted love, which is Ruth and Naomi. And Ruth and Naomi were daughter-in-law and mother-in-law, but the son and the children had all died. And it was just them left over. And she converted so they could stay together and travel together. And she was going to marry Ruth's uncle, who was like an elderly uncle, almost maybe even the first example of sex work, really, like where one of the first examples where she was going to sleep with this man in order to restore their faith in humanity. Like, the covenant of love between Ruth and Naomi and the covenant of love between David and Jonathan are the only covenants of love that unite two people in the Bible, and they're read at every heterosexual wedding.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. It sounds, I love the way that you're able to actually be really plugged into kind of like what you believe, like the truest meaning of religion and spirituality for you.
Here's the thing though, some of it's also archaeology though, Matthew. Some of it's like just obvious. Like they say in the Bible sometimes that certain temples were built out of marble and gold, but then you go to Israel and there's no marble and gold.
Yeah. And I like that there was a meme posted recently that was like true. Like I never even thought of it before. There's no white people in the Bible.
Yeah, maybe right. The Romans, right? Yeah.
There's no white people in the Bible.
Yeah.
Well, and in that same aspect, if you think about Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, go, Joseph, you know, she even has a musical, but they're framing it wrong. Whenever that story is told to us, it's told that Joseph had this beautiful coat that his dad gave him because he was the favorite son, mm-hmm. and everyone was jealous that he was the favorite son, so they stole the coat from him and sent him off into slavery. No. Joseph is described in the Book of Enoch, which is outside of the Bible, but around the time, like an almanac, talking about how he was hairless and sensitive, which is a very big deal because in the Bible, they talk about Samson being hairy, all these kind of hair, muscly, hairy. And he was sweet, sensitive, and hairless and had long hair and was given not a coat, but according to 86 AD, a ketanet pasim, which is directly only used one other place in the Bible to describe a dress that a virginal princess is given on her wedding day.
Oh, he got a princess dress.
She was genderqueer. Joseph was genderqueer and wearing a rainbow princess dress. And that makes so much sense. Like he went out to the field while his brothers were working in the heat, is showing up in this rainbow dress like JVN, and they beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And then if somebody really wanted that coat, they would have taken the coat.
Now that story makes sense.
Yeah. And if somebody really wanted the coat, which is what they all tell us, then they would have not ripped it and poured blood all over it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it was really more about him being genderqueer. And to even think that Joseph could have been a trans woman of color and that these people are being told that their perspectives are not allowed in the church and they're not allowed in the Bible when it's in the Word. It's just people aren't reading it that way because they're letting someone else do the reading for them.
You're was blowing this my
something,
mind.
What, Dana, was this something that you did at your own individual deep dive on, or did you find other people that you were able to?
You know I'm really, this has been like during quarantine really that I'm getting this deep into at least the biblical aspect of it. I've always been close to God and Christ, but like, I feel like David and Jonathan woke me up so bad because the same Bible that drove me to conversion therapy was the same Bible that I was reading this amazing gay love story in. And it's this physical, same copy. And so I'm just looking at it different. It's almost like you're holding a piece of clear glass and you're like, there's nothing in it. It's clear till you hold it up to the light and the rainbow comes out.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, we have a lot of people listening to you and a lot of people look up to you as an activist. And my question is, after the conversion therapy, after the discussion, where you arrive at the place where like, I'm gay and this is all right. Do you remember that moment?
For me, it started around Prop 8, you know, at the time I like, you know, was wanting to get married to my boyfriend and it felt very personal and I did all the protests. And I felt like I was showing up as a voice where it mattered and people weren't like outing me and putting me on the Inquirer because I was like in the front of the picket lines, but I wasn't exactly like saying I'm gay. I wasn't donating my time to our community's causes. Like, you know, I was listening to Deepak Chopra and Oprah's 30-day meditation challenge.
Oh yeah.
And like one of the days I made it through like 18 of them, to be honest, but I slept through a lot of them, but one of the days, cause they're soothing. It's just like yoga, your body needs it.
Yeah.
No, I one of them was about living a life of service. Mm-hmm. And I really thought to myself, like, what do I actually do? Like, I call myself a Christian. I think I'm a nice person. I say that I'm giving, but I don't do anything for the community, like anything. Like, everything is self-serving. My whole career is like my headshots, my name, my comedy, my... I was like, what else could I do? So I started volunteering. I did Volunteer Match, and I started like reaching out and canvassing for Obama at the time and doing other things. Like, and that got me involved politically. That got me involved like humanitarian wise with things. And I started seeing like such a return on my investment of giving. Like my giving of my time just brought good people into my life and
I love that
and taught me things. And like, you know, I got more into the earth and like learning, like you can learn about God from gardening. Cause it's like, you learn patience from seeds and persistence from grass. And like, you know, like all about love with all the kind of different flowers there are, like summer, you know, you're like, why is that guy with that bitch? And then you realize it's like a desert flower that blooms for only him at midnight. You know what I mean? Like, it just depends on what it's worth to you. And like, what kind of like, so I got like really in tune with myself and really in tune with God by giving. By like, you know, experience a life of being of selflessness. And then around the 10th anniversary of Mean Girls, it was like the first big time that Mean Girls was being acknowledged as like a classic, I guess. Like, it had been an old movie up until the 10th anniversary. And then it became like this like standalone, like, you know, whatever. And I got a letter from someone who said, I don't know if you're gay or not, and it doesn't matter. And I was like, oh my God, it matters so much. And then it was, and then I was like, I'm going to come out. And then I kept reading and he said, I don't know if you're gay or not, it doesn't matter. But when I was in middle school, I was in eighth grade, I was beat up for being chubby and tortured for being a sissy. And then your movie came out. And then on the first day of my freshman year in ninth grade, the popular senior girls in the school walked up to me and said, you're like Damien, come sit with us. And he was like, thank you. He was like, thank you so much for giving me something in media that I could point to and say, that's me and be proud. And changed my high school career. And I'm forever grateful. And it was so powerful.
I just got chills. Yeah, I got chills. And my eyes are welling up a little bit.
It was so powerful for me. I just couldn't handle it. And I came out in this letter to Damien, like explaining that, like, I felt so uncomfortable. I was meeting this gay. I had not auditioned for a gay role ever until Damien. And then after that, like, I was going in for the stuff I normally went in for. Like, I tested on Entourage as Turtle and was going in for all these things. And then all those parts, they wouldn't let me even, like, be seen. Wow. Everything was like, he has a feather boa and lashes. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, it just went to, like, you know, all these... And the stuff in 2004 wasn't as progressive as now. The storylines weren't there, you know? So I just kind of shied away. I did a couple of things that were like really random. Like, I spit on your grave, where I play this crazy rapist. Cause for somehow playing a rapist is better than playing another queer person. Like, I don't know, like, where, and it started to eat away at me. Like, I started to get into this whole kind of thing. So I left the business and I started working with Allie Willis, who I think we are mutual friends with, before when she was still with us.
Yeah. And, she passed away.
And I used to film for her, and I was like kind of like her creative director for like a couple of years. And I was like, I'm going to get in this way. I'm going to go make a movie about this woman and or do some project with her, and we'll win an Emmy or an Oscar, and then I'll be back, and then I'll start doing movies again. And I get offers, so I'll wait for an offer. Like, I'm like, I'm just going to like, I get offers like, you know, 2-3 times a year, not like for like every 5 minutes like everybody else, but like, it's like, hey, if I sit around, like, one will come, and I could just be artistic and survive, and I'm going to do that because all this is bullshit. And then I got offered Looking, you know, like, it was so amazing how that happened, because my friend Lori Malkin, who's a casting director in New York City, and I were hanging out and smoking weed and hang, you know, and she was like, are you watching Looking? And I was like, no. I was like, there's not really guys like me on shows like that. She's like, well, why don't you be the guy on the show like you? And I was like, it doesn't work like that. Or I'd be on American Horror Story or whatever the hell. She was like, well, why don't you just write the casting director a letter? And I was like, let me look it up, see who casts it. And it was Carmen Cuba, who discovered me for my first movie.
Bullet. Oh, my God.
Wow. And I was like, oh, I could talk to her. I know her.
Really well.
Like, she discovered me like in a club, like, and in a gay club for a straight role. Somebody who would like really understand me, you know? And so, at the time, I knew they were going to be doing all these Where Are They Now type things.
Right,
and
right.
They always got them wrong. It was like a picture of me from like a million years ago. So I was trying to, I was serving like man, bear realness. So they weren't like getting man, bear, daddy realness.
Right,
so
right, right.
I did all these photo shoot stuff, which actually led to a modeling career, ironically. But I just was like, I'm going to do all these photo shoots. So I shot all over Detroit when I was with Allie, and I shot all over. And then I hit up Carmen. I was like, hey, if you ever need a sexy bear for your show, and I sent her all these shoots,
Right.
Lo and behold, they were looking for a bear. It was one of their biggest critiques from the season one, that there was nobody more cuddly. And so
there's nobody cuddly, and there were no Asian people. It took place in San Francisco.
Yeah, there was.
There wasn't.
Yeah. Jonathan Groff's coworker, his best friend at work, is Asian.
His coworker.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't a living, breathing homosexual. Okay. He was like, he had two lines per episode. Listen, I feel like this is part one of our conversation, because you're so much about like body and spirituality, and I want to talk to you more and more and more, but we're running out of time, and I absolutely adore you. We usually end our show, we wrap it up with a hot message, and you've given us so many hot messages today. But if there's somebody struggling with their sexuality, or is thinking about conversion therapy, or is questioning that, do you have a message to them? Somebody who may have gone through the same questioning you went through?
Yeah, I just think that, like, think about your most prized possession in your life, like whatever it is. It could be anything. It could be like your Louis Vuitton bag. It could be like your baby nephew. It doesn't matter. And would you let somebody take that away from you? Like, and so why would you let someone take away God from you, which really should be like your most precious thing? Like God has done so much in my life and has filled my life so much that nobody should take God away from you just because you're gay and who you love. God doesn't want that. That's man telling you something that God wants for you. Mm-hmm. So that God loves you unbelievably. And even if your parents don't agree, you're on loan to your parents from God. God loaned children to their parents. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's like your parents don't even have a say in that. Just trust me. And I also think as a queer Christian, it's a lot of our responsibility to save our parents who are true Christians who just don't know any better because they've been taught wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, that's part of our journey and part of our big contribution to Christianity is gay people are going to change that wave.
We change our families. I absolutely agree. Daniel, where can our listeners find you on your social medias?
You can find me at What's Up Danny on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, blackpeoplemeet.com, JDate, Christian Mingle, Farmers Only, and Venmo.
And Yas Jesus, your podcast.
And Yas Jesus Pod. Welcome. Yeah. Please leave us a praise report or a prayer request.
All right. We love you, Daniel. I love you unconditionally. And I'll see you soon, okay?
Thanks Daniel.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Thanks, you.
Bye, honey. Wow, golly, Matt. Now I want to read the Bible. I had no idea there were so many homoerotic stories in the Bible.
I didn't either. I mean, because I should have stayed awake in CCD. I think I missed those parts.
Yeah, I should have been. While I was looking at other people's erasers and pencils, I could have been listening to a hot gay love story. What's your hot message of the day?
I think my hot message, and it's something that I'm taking from Daniel and a lot of what he was sharing, the thing that stood out for me was that he used so much of his own critical thinking. Like at the end of the day, he still relied on his own internal compass. And I think it's easy for us to look around at everybody else around us for answers, and nobody's the authority on us but us. So learning how to actually trust that, get still within yourself and trust that, and let that be the thing that guides you. It's the very thing, it sounds like, that has brought Daniel to kind of like all the openness and success and peace that he's been able to find. So I would say fucking ride that wave.
Yeah. And the thing that like got me was that him portraying somebody who was authentic to himself, even if he was in a space, meant so much to other people.
Yeah.
And you translate that into your real life about if you bring your authentic self into the room 24/7, it lifts other people up.
Yeah.
You have no idea what other people are going through. And if there's somebody struggling and they're seeing you is confident and happy and happy in your own skin, then it gives them permission to do the same.
Totally. Yeah. Don't ever dull your shine, because if you can shine real bright, then everybody else can bask in the glow.
Yeah. That's a message I want beat into me. Hammered into me by Matt Dempsey. Where can people find you on your socials, big boy?
You can find me at MJ Dempsey Psych on Instagram, Twitter, Matthew J. Dempsey Psychotherapy on Facebook.
You can find me at Alec Mappa on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us at Stage 29 Podcasts on the Twitter. DM us. Let us know what you're thinking about. We love answering questions on the air. We got to come up with merch or something. Giveaways. Yes. We read your question on the air. Don't forget to download and subscribe. We are the mental health podcast that's going to save the world one hot mess at a time. Tune in next week. We'll have more hot mess fun. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the hosts and guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.